This episode of Disposable Heroes was brought to you by EcoSocks. EcoSocks was founded upon the idea that providing a better product at a comparable price using a renewable material is beneficial in many ways. So why did they choose bamboo as the renewable material? So it's cooler when it's hot, it's warmer when it's cool, they keep your feet nice and dry, they like pull the moisture away from your feet during the day, it's amazing. Bamboo is the softest and most comfortable fabric you'll ever wear on your feet. Yassad promises that, I swear. Otherwise, this episode is free. Oh, wait. It is free. It's also odor eliminating. For some strange reason, it doesn't actually smell. I could wear Eco Socks 3 days in a row. As long as you let them dry out overnight, they do not smell. It is bizarre. So they've aired them out and used them for as many as 10 days, and they've remained odor-free. The bamboo just doesn't collect the odor like cotton does. So anyway, head over to eco.com. That's EEKOE.com and get a pair for yourself. They're 20% off for the month of October. So get out there and do it.
Aloha. Welcome to Disposable Heroes, the Ocho. Just kidding. Just wanted to do that. But it's episode 8 of Disposable Heroes. Getting close to double digits here, guys. Thanks for joining us, and we're changing it up for the intro a little bit. I've got the ever faithful, ever trusting, ever living Mitch Army Knife right here with me right now for the intro. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good.
So we're doing it a little different because some serendipity, which is a awesome word that I've been using lately, happened with the recording of this episode. It was recorded on location on the Nice Dream Summer Tour with my band Pepper and Tribal Seeds. And this episode has Zebby, drummer for Tribal Seeds, on it. And it was recorded on location. Zeb is one of the most legendary, I guess you could say, American reggae drummers ever. Yes. So, me personally, I mean, all of us in the band and a lot of people, you know, he is a ton of the drumming that we grew up with, especially in the live environment of all this super legendary old reggae. And it's amazing that the sound quality of that, when you sent it to me, Mitch, it sounds exactly like an old Lee Scratch Perry record.
Yeah. And totally not on purpose.
Yeah. So that's this amazingly serendipitous moment. And of course, we kind of wanted to give everyone the heads up and just let you know that I guess I'll let you take it from here about how the sound quality is.
Yeah. I mean, basically, we had one source that was supposed to record it, and that source didn't record it. So it's not clean. It's actually from the laptop. Thankfully, the laptop microphone still recorded, not the actual mics. So what ends up happening is you get a little bit of fan noise that we've cleaned up significantly, but this interview, as I listened to it, I remember when it happened, you were like, we got to keep that one. And
yeah.
I wasn't there for the interview. I was doing sound check. It works. And the interview itself is amazing.
Yeah.
And I know. Had to keep it.
We had to keep it because it was amazing too. My uncle, the band's mentor, was in the room while it was happening.
An appearance, by the way.
Yeah, who makes an appearance in the podcast, the Don Wesley, for those of you who know. Also, Kaleo was in the room doing yoga. It was like, it was such a rad,
that's right, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was just the flow of energy in the room was just so rad. And then Zeb was like, I was geeking out so hard on these stories that Zeb was telling me about.
Oh,
about playing drums for all my favorite reggae artists, yeah, and being in Jamaica and everything. So
there was one part about showing up to a club with Barrington Levy, where Barrington Levy was like, "Just keep going, man."
Yeah, No, that's just one. Like, seriously, that's like the tip of the iceberg, and the iceberg of this podcast is so huge. But I mean, honestly, I think I want to kind of cap off this little special intro that we have by saying, it's amazing that what the content and who this podcast is about, because it sounds like it was filmed on location in Kingston, Jamaica in like the early 80s or something. Yeah. Just by some weird chance moment. And it was actually recorded on location in Northern California in Sonoma County in our green room on the Nice Dreams summer tour. So it was a little like almost technology is going to take us back in time. So episode number 8 of Disposable Heroes with Zebby on drums. All right.
What's up, everyone? This is episode number 8 of Disposable Heroes, and we're on location, actually, out on tour on the Nice Dreams summer tour, and I have extra special guest on the show, the Master Blaster, Zebby, who plays drums for Tribal Seeds. But I also know you before that as Stressa from Detour Posse.
Yeah, I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
Same like you guys,
y'all
go way back.
Yeah, definitely go way back. But just real quick, let's talk about it's been, you know, obviously my band Pepper and your band Tribal Seeds been out on tour for the last like 3 weeks.
Great,
so, man, it's been so fun.
Awesome being with you guys, man. It's a long time coming, man. It's like, this is like the dream. This is really the Nice Dream tour, I think, Paul. It's like just to be around the homies. And, you know what I mean?
Totally.
It's like family vibes. It's really cool, man.
I know. That's why I thought that the name for it just fit perfect.
Who thought of that? Did you think of it?
It came from us, I know, at some point, because it was a reference, obviously, to Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
And we're such big Cheech and Chong fans. Yeah. And just with the lineup, it seemed like the perfect, you know, just the
it's cool, man.
The vibey crowd and just
it's
the,
really
the
cool,
everything.
I said it's the best tour I've been on, man. It's like really fun, man.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
And it's not winter, we're not freezing.
No, but let's touch on your drumming real quick about this tour. So you've been playing with the two bands, actually.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm just feeling it for Fortunate Youth. Jordan left to go home. I don't know if anybody, you know, knows, but his dad was in the hospital and still is, so he's having a lot of family issues he need to go take care of.
Yeah,
so
prayers,
you know, wish
prayers,
him,
prayers
him, you know.
Yeah.
But he's doing okay. I think his dad's doing better. So yeah. I'm hoping he'll probably rejoin next week.
Okay.
So I've just been kind of, you know,
hey, well, just
holding it down for the brothers until he gets back. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Hats off to you, man. Like that's so like I put you in a different category as me of a drummer for like, you can adapt so well to that, you know, where like me, I just, my heart's thrown so into Pepper my whole life, and that's all I really know.
Yeah.
Where,
as well, it should be too. You know,
yeah. Well, absolutely. Where, yeah. But it's like, I'm like the whole, I don't know, for lack of a better term, chameleon vibe is so,
yeah.
Hats off to you, man. It's
Thank
like,
you, man.
So
that's kind of about my whole career is kind of based on that sort of like, that's why you're right, I'm pretty adaptable. That's why I've been able to like, even fitting in with Tribal Seeds, you know, we didn't, like the last four, we had like one rehearsal before we went. So,
right.
You know, but I'm used to that, like, pressure and stress of like Fortunate Youth, we didn't even rehearse, like,
right,
you know what I mean? But because for my background, for what I come from, backing so many artists for so many years, like I'm okay, cool, it's go time, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, how was that, since being new to Tribal Seeds, how was that taking the helm from CeeLo?
Well, I mean, I have big shoes to fill. I mean, CeeLo's an excellent, amazing drummer, and then, you know, he'd also been in the band 11 years and wrote a lot of parts, and you know what I mean?
Right.
It was big shoes to fill, you know? He's doing a lot, you know, from the drummer world perspective, you know, we're doing, you know, a lot of stuff with electronics and tech stuff.
You're rocking two pads, I
two pads,
two STD
pads. Yeah, I'm using two. It's just, I don't really have to use two, but it makes it easier for me to keep things separate.
Totally. It's
no,
more, it's more of like, I look at it like what I'm thinking of as an Excel sheet right now, and you just, it's way more organized. You having two
SPD.
Yeah,
And I have to stay organized on this gig particularly because I'm running a lot of stuff from back there. So it's like, you know, yeah, it was some big shoes to fill for sure, man. And CeeLo's is, by the way, doing great with Sublime Wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And I asked just because, like I said, it's me coming from my world of drumming. It's, I've been in this band for 20 years and that's all I know. So just even, not even the fact of who you're filling, I think just who you were refilling, excuse me, just the fact of filling a spot, you know, is just interesting.
Yeah,
to find
yeah, man.
About,
it's, you know, anytime you come in, especially an established band, and you know, this is a little bit different than like, you know, me as a backing drummer for like artists, you know, solo artists.
Same.
If somebody can't make a gig or something like that, you know, I get somebody to fill in. You know, Long Sea does a good job. The audience doesn't really care. They came in to see the audience.
Right.
Tribal Seeds is a band. Pepper's a band.
Right.
So it's like if you, you know, couldn't make a tour or something, somebody fills in your shoes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Well, it's like, it's hard. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, you have to get through that hurdle of people going, ah, who's this guy? You know?
Of course. Of course. Well, you can't please anything. Like, if I've learned a few things from being in the music industry for so long, one of them is that you can't please everyone in the world at one time.
No, no. And you can't, and you also can't copy somebody,
absolutely.
Especially as a drummer.
Yeah.
You know, so me, like, for instance, like the Tribal Seeds, when I came in, you know, I am playing it, channeling CeeLo's as much as possible, but I also have to put my own spin on things.
Of course.
So I'm bringing in some of my things and a lot of stuff he did, so the audience doesn't like lose what they had, but also like, oh, there's something new. You know, say, oh, man. You know,
well, music needs a human element, in my opinion.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And some of that gets very lost sometimes when people are relying so much on computers and
for sure.
Not for
yeah, for
music.
Sure, yeah.
Real quick, you brought up, or going back a little bit, you brought up the word of adaptive, or how you're so well of adapting. And when I think of reggae music, that is such a huge word to me, adapting, you know what I mean? Because that's kind of the basis of, you just met my Uncle Nerd, Don Wesley, and he's taught us everything we know about reggae, because he used to go to Jamaica and buy records.
Oh, he's also
okay.
Oh,
yeah.
He probably knows all the artists that I play.
Yeah, 100%.
Sure.
No, 100%.
I'll talk to him afterwards.
You got to chat with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But hey, big
shout out. Is that how you got into it? Like,
yeah.
Through him?
Yeah, yeah, totally. He's the one that when we moved to California, the three of us and Pepper, my mom and him are best friends from high school. In 99, my mom told me to make sure and take care of the boys.
Right.
So that turned into us in the middle of his huge room with thousands of vinyl that he brought back from Jamaica
through the
80s.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, he's seen like he was hanging Black Uhuru with Sly and Robbie in the 80s at the Catalyst in Santa Cruz and that whole.
That's kind of where I started too, was like the bands back then, because my brother got me into it. It was like probably mid 80s.
Yeah.
And I saw.
This is exactly what I want to talk about.
Yeah,
so,
this is like how I got into it. Was like my brother, I played punk rock like you did, like a lot of us did, I'm sure. CeeLo's, you know.
And this was in LA.
In LA, yeah. I'm from Venice originally, but then I'm moving around and stuff. But, you know, I was in punk rock bands and I liked classic rock. I like, you know, that kind of stuff. Reggae, I was kind of like a skater kid. It was kind of like slow to me at first.
Okay.
You know, I didn't like it at first.
Yeah.
My brother brought me to see Black Uhuru, and it was Puma Jones and Michael Rose and Ducky, and then Sly and Robbie in the Taxi Game. There was like three shows I went to.
What venue was this at?
I'm gonna say that show was probably the Universal Amphitheater.
So it was a big show. They were.
Yeah, it was like their heyday of Black Uhuru.
When the Red Rocks DVD was
around. I'm gonna say it's like 84, 85, something like that. I was still a kid.
Respect.
And He brought me to that show, and then two other shows. One was Steel Pulse and Jimmy Cliff at the Greek Theater. And we had like front row seats, and I was just sitting there. That was the original Steel Pulse with Grizzly. One of my idols.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was either like the True Democracy or the Earth Crisis album tour. And they were just like, boom, and Jimmy Cliff too, like that. And then Oswald, back when they were doing African Children and had the horns and stuff. And those three shows, man, I watched, and I was like, I want to learn how to play like these guys. So it's Sly Dunbar, Drummy Zeb from Oswald, and Grizzly, Steel Pulse. You know what I mean? And I never got to see Bob play, unfortunately, or Peter Tosh, you know what I mean? So I wish I had seen them. But you know what I mean? Those three shows, I was hooked. I was like, and then I sat in my room and just played the records all day. Like.
So did you ever find, because it's funny, jumping like all around, is the punk rock melded with reggae is kind of what's got us here today through bands like Sublime and whatnot.
You guys.
So, slightly stupid. So it makes me think back then when you were making the transition in the 80s and realizing like, okay, I'm a punk rock guy, but this reggae is actually pretty cool. Did you right away see maybe the similarity in attitudes between the two music?
Absolutely, man. That's awesome. I think that's the big reason I got into it. It wasn't just like the rhythms and stuff. I actually immersed myself in the culture of reggae and Rasta culture, and I wanted to learn about what is this about. You know, it wasn't really a popular thing back then, especially for non-Jamaicans.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. You know what I'm saying? There wasn't like a Cali reggae.
No, there's purists. That's why Nerd, the Don Wesley, he's very biased.
He's been back since way back, so
he's very biased when it comes to reggae.
When I first, I had locks, I had dreads for like 18 years. When I first started growing up, people were like, what is going on with your hair? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, like now it's like, okay, everybody got dreads. You know what I mean? Like the scene, the culture has immersed itself into now like American culture more.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. Only thing I will say, though, I think it's great that the music has grown so much. Mm-hmm. But the only thing I will say is that I think it's kind of like the rap scene. It's like, you know, I wish that a lot of the fans, and I know everybody loves their bands, and they love, you know, us and you guys and Fortune and all, you know, but I wish a lot of them would kind of go back and respect it and promote, like, the other artists that kind of established.
100%, 100%, 100%.
And you know, as well as like most of the musicians do, a lot of the fans are young.
And that's an analogy for music in general, I think, though.
It is, not just reggae.
Yeah, I think because that's the thing that blew our mind when we, I think, three of us and Pepper, started really going back and finding out things about, like, that chorus was written by Half Pint, or like, oh, you know what I mean?
And started blowing, and start, I saw Red on Sublime, and, you know,
yeah, it started blowing our minds in that, on that ways, and finding where adapting all this stuff was, and then knowing that, oh, Bradley was so keen in on this stuff, that he just got, like,
it was dope the way, because they knew the old stuff, and Stupid, and you guys too, like, you grew up kind of knowing all that stuff. And
well, it blew our mind, it honestly blew up when we started realizing all this, and then, like, the deep stuff, like, all the Sublime stuff that took from Tenor Saw. Adapted. That you're just like, I'm getting chills talking about it right now.
Yeah, man.
But and that, it's cool. But I agree with you. Because I'm a purist and I love knowing where everything really came from. I mean, it's like you think about Led Zeppelin and that all was, and Rolling Stones. That's all old blues, man. Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it evolved into
exactly. They made it their own style. They made it their own styles. Like, you know, all the bands. And so, you know, at that time, I didn't really have a band, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have a band like Pep or Stupid or Sublime. It was just like, I just wanted to learn how to play. My goal back then was to, you know, I never knew I would back like hundreds of Jamaican artists, you know what I'm saying? I just wanted to get the respect of these cats that I saw play to go, hey, man, you're pretty good. You know what I'm saying?
Right, see, because you didn't have any, what about the punk rock scene before you went to those two reggae shows and got your mind blown with reggae? Did you have any punk rock bands before?
Just like local bands, nothing big, you know what I mean? Just like playing around and, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I like the music, I love the, you know, vibe, but I was like, man, I kind of need more, you know? Okay,
so let's continue down that one. So so you go to the two shows, the second of which is Jimmy Cliff and Steel Pulse.
Yeah.
And then you head down to where you're
in. You know, it's funny, everything kind of just happened like organically. Like I started a couple reggae bands. I was, you know, starting to get better. I learned from Waddy Gadd, was one of my teachers from Trinidad. Big up Waddy Gadd, he's back there now. And a couple other Jamaican brothers and, you know, guys like Santa Davis, and I would watch them and learn, and you know what I'm saying, and all that. And so, like, somehow, some way, I linked up one of the first artists I backed, I think it was Mikey Dredd or something. I was, like, 17 or something.
Uh-huh.
And Ross Michael and the Sons of Negus. So Ross Michael, my brother Ilox was playing with them and brought me in to play drums. And actually, Ross Michael took me to Jamaica the first time when I was like, I want to say I was like 19, 20. We played at Sunfest.
What year was that?
I'm giving away my age, right?
Yeah.
It was in the 90s sometime.
Oh, okay, 90s, I like it.
It was in the 90s sometime. And
Nirvana was about to come out.
Yeah, they're probably out. Yeah. So I went there and I stayed in Jamaica for like almost a month, you know what I mean? And I didn't just go there to play a few shows. I went there because I wanted to learn more about the culture of reggae, where it came from.
Right.
Went to a bunch of studios, slept on a ping pong table in Kingston, and you know what I mean? Like, soldiered it, you know what I'm saying?
You
and
to
then
when
you go to Jamaica as a white youth from Los Angeles, like, there you have to prove yourself as a musician playing their music in Jamaica. So, you know, those kind of things kind of like hardened me to be like, all right, and if you don't play good, they're going to tell you you're not playing good.
Yeah,
but if you play good, they're going to praise you, like, so they did, because I really was like focused at that point. Like, I don't, you know.
Is there any rough roads getting to that point where you're kind of feeling comfortable?
In LA, like learning from my boys, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Waddy used to be like, nah, you're not playing right. And you know what I mean? Like, he was, you know, but he had a method to his madness to show me, like, do this right and you're gonna, you know, you can do this. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
Kind of instilled
When I first started playing reggae, it was like, you know, I thought I was playing it correctly, but I was still coming from the rock thing. So I was playing a lot of crazy fills and, you know, too much overplaying. And the one thing I learned about reggae music back then was one of my brethren told me, he goes, it's not what you play, it's what you don't play that makes the music special.
Yeah.
It's, you point. Know, sometimes it's the notes or the thing that you don't hear. Like if you do a roll and you just go, God, and you don't even hit the crash sometimes. And we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
Those kind of things, not all the time, but like those little things like that made it special. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't just always like, okay, I'm going to do a fill every four bars, you know?
Yeah.
And it's going to always end on the cymbal.
Well, the one drop beat, like, lends itself so good to not
Oh, exactly. Yeah, one job all day. Yeah, it's nice to do it, but if you don't do it once in a while,
yeah,
it's like, oh, you expect it, but then it's not there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, yeah, so I learned. So after that, I started touring. I, like, when I was starting to tour with Europe, all that stuff, and I was, like, in 1920 with just different artists, and then we just... I started backing different artists, and then...
This kind of all stemmed from being in, spending that time in Kingston?
Before that, just, yeah, like, Ross Michael, I gotta say, like, that actually opened a lot of doors for me, because then other musicians and artists saw me with him, and they were like, oh, hey, you know, we got so-and-so coming in, can you back? So I was starting to back artists even back then, and then we got Detroit Posse together. Detroit Posse was, we had a singer, it was Dakai's band, and it was just him, the solo artist, and the Detroit Posse. And we actually started out to do our own records. We did. We had a record called Cherry in the Sky. And it did pretty good back then. You know, I remember Barbara Barabino and the beat and all that, 92.3 and all that. You know, we get airplay and stuff. But we were kind of more like, our albums were all over the place, more like third world-ish, you know.
Like a lot of electronic kind of keyboard.
Yeah. It was poppy. And it was good. It just wasn't, like, focused. Like, when you hear Pepper, you know it's Pepper. When you hear Travis, you know it's Travis. People heard our record and didn't know. It was like one song was rootsy, one song was pop. You know what I mean? It was like kind of all over the place. So, you know, we did okay. But then the band was pretty much made up of all guys like myself that were backing other people, like Ethan Mouse. Stevie came in, and Stevie, our guitar player, we call him Matt Ross. He, you know, used to back everybody for years. Mm-hmm. The backing service band with Fabian Cook and all those guys. So I knew him from back then. I used to idolize him, looking up to him, watching him back like all these, you know,
right.
Jamaican artists. You know what I mean? I'm like, I do the jazz back in having Jamaican, or maybe he do. I mean, I could do it too, you know.
Right.
So we kind of put the band together like that, of guys that all had done that, and then it just like promoters start calling us. You know, one of the first artists we backed was like Shinehead and Nicodemus, and you know, guys like that back then. Yeah, and then we actually started out backing mostly dancehall artists. Vito Posse. We started out, you know, when Mr. Vegas came out, they saw, and then like Red Rat, Gentle Degree, like all like the '90s dancehall. Terrified of this kind of, you know, era. Uh-huh. So we would back all them Spraga bands, you know, all them. And then it just kind of started going. So then all the artists in Jamaica started hearing about us. And they go, oh, there's a band on the West Coast. And back then it was hard to get visas for their bands. So they all the artists started, yo, we want Detroit. So yeah, that's how it happened. And then, you know, we started getting Barrington Levy. We've been with, like, what, 18 years?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, at Half Pint.
Half Pine, we worked it for years. Greg Rises, we worked it for years. We worked with Sean Paul for years. Wayne Wonder, you know.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, we just and we were, like you said, adaptability. We were good at that. We could go dancehall. We could play with. We played with Alton Ellis and Mighty Diamonds. You know, we would like do rock steady, and a dancehall artist, and then like a roots artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, we tried to pride ourselves on being good on each. Because reggae is broad. It's not just reggae.
Yeah, totally.
It's like there's so many factions of artists in reggae. So it's like, you know.
Because that's where we probably first caught wind of Detour Posse. And like I said, how I first knew you as Stressa from Detour Posse was in Pepper moved to San Diego in 1999. And one of the first shows we went and saw was Half Pint in Long Beach at this right by Queen Mary at the Reggae Fest.
Yeah, it's like Old School Jam, right?
Yeah, I think so. So that was, so yeah, so we've, like, you've been on our radar for the first, like,
you guys too,
real
man.
Reggae band we ever saw when we first came.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
But have you guys, back on the backing, did it become a thing where, I don't know, I guess there's only, like, so many rhythms in reggae and whatnot where you guys wouldn't even need to rehearse necessarily when people would
Yeah, party. I mean, we've done that. Like, because, you know, all the Bob Marley days and all the Reggae on the Rivers and stuff, we were pretty much the house band. So we would back, like, you know, six artists. And honestly, we would probably get to rehearse with, like, two of them. But on our own, one thing I'll say this, all the drummers out there, musicians, homework is homework, you know?
Right.
Don't go to rehearsal and rehearse the parts that you should have learned already. You know, you go to rehearsal to tighten up. Unless
right.
you're writing music. If you're going to back people or somebody sends you a CD and says, learn these songs, don't go to rehearsal like, okay, I'm going to learn them now, you know?
Right.
So we would all really do our homework at home and then rehearse together, even if the artist wasn't there, and then just go on stage. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and then I always think there's that next level of kind of quote-unquote rehearsal where there's the first show and it's in front of people, and that's a little different than when you're...
Yeah, well, a lot of times we only got one show.
And,
it was just like
yeah,
40 minutes, and then I've backed artists that I've never even met. Like Matt Cobra, I backed him twice. I never even met him, said hi, nothing. But
yeah.
I backed him on stage. You know, it's kind of weird. You know, I mean, you like trip on that because people think, oh, that they go see a big show like Bob Marley. It's like, oh, these guys must have rehearsed 100 times or something. You don't know, like, you know, we might have got, you know, an hour for their set.
And we, and that's where, speaking of Bob Marley days, that's where we played with. You were there when you saw us play
for the dance first all time day. You guys played dance all day. You played a few times, right?
I don't know. I think that was the only time we played. And you thought we were absolutely crazy, huh?
Well, I thought you guys were great. I thought it was funny that they put you guys on dance all day. The first thing these guys do is just take off their shirts. And everybody, there's a lot of Jamaicans there. And you know, it was dance all day, too. And I said, these brothers got balls right now. Low slung guitars. And you guys sounded dope. You know what I mean? I just gave it up to you guys. So I was like, they got balls.
We're just so honored to be playing with so many great artists.
Yeah, I was like super excited to be there, too. Yeah. Like, you know, it's cool, man.
Yeah.
It's great, though. It's amazing to see how far you guys came from even back then. And you guys already had a big name back then. And you guys, you know, stuck it out. That's perseverance, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Same with me. It's like, you persevere through, you know, I'm sure people told you a long time ago, what are you going to do? You play drums for a living? Really? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They told me, like, really, you know, this is going to be your career? You know what I mean? They're like,
with anything, but that just goes back to you following your own path and doing absolutely. What you
But I know a lot of people that didn't, that wanted to do it, but it wasn't the only thing in their heart that they wanted to do. You know, guys like all of us here, I think this is all we've ever wanted to do, and now we stuck with it.
Right, totally.
And there's a lot of bumps in the road, bro, like, you know.
And do you still do the Detour Posse stuff?
We still back. Like, when I'm not on tour with Travel Seas, like, after this tour, I'll go back and have some shows with Barrington Levy, and we just did Reggae on the River with Assassin, and I got a Wayne Wonder we did a show with, and we got a couple more shows. So Travel Seeds is my priority, obviously, but when we're not touring or recording, then I'm still backing cats, like, you know what I mean? I'm still, like, because I don't like to just, like, sit around and wait.
Right.
Like, I love to play music. I love to play drums, and I like the challenge of playing with different artists.
Yeah, which reminds me, let's go back to that first trip down to Kingston and sleeping on ping pong tables and whatnot.
Yeah, in the rain.
I just want to know more about that trip. What else happened? What were the gigs like?
We went there to do Sumfest. And actually, at Sumfest, we went down there to do Sumfest, and we had booked about, Ross and Michael had booked about 4 other gigs, like one in the Grill, one in Kingston, one, you know, just like some smaller places too. So Santa Davis actually ended up getting to play drums at Sumfest, and I played percussion.
So the first time you met him?
No, I'd already known Santa.
Because he's mentoring you kind of already.
A little bit, yeah. But that was probably the first time we actually had ever been able to, like, really, like, hang out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But we'd known each other from, yeah. So, and I knew Fully way back. You know. And so Santa came and played drums on Sumfest, and I played percussion. But then the rest of the shows, he left, and I played drums on. But I just wanted to stay. I'd never been to Jamaica before I was young. I was growing my locks. I was reading the Bible. I wanted to get into the whole culture of Rastafari, what it was about,
mm-hmm.
where it came from. You know, I didn't want to go there and stay in a resort. And, you know, that's all nice, but I wanted to see the real Jamaica.
And Kingston's, like, still gnarly to this day. Like, how was it back then?
There's rough parts.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of rough parts. Actually, right now, Montego Bay's got more violence than Kingston does.
It changed.
Montego Bay used to be the super tourist, you know, like, white rich people kind of thing, but they definitely got some more violent. A lot of guns came into the island, you know. But back then, you had to really know where you're going. Like, there's a lot of places, even Jamaicans that live in Kingston won't go down. Rima Jungle and places like that. Like, I remember going to the bus station from Kingston to Mobe, and instantly this dude just pulled a knife on me. It was like, give me your money.
Really? Know? This is kind of shit I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
I didn't have no money. I was literally broke. So this dude was about my size, so I'm sizing him up like, all right, how am I going to handle this, right?
Right.
And he didn't know that the bass player I was with was a huge dude, right? Big dude, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't see him. He just saw me, right? So he pulls his knife out, and he's like, yeah, I want some money, you know? And he wasn't in the process of stabbing me, but he was letting me know, like, give me some money or I'm going to cut you kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you going to do, kill me? But,
yeah.
Right? So as we going through this little interchange, my friend sees, right? And he comes over. He's like the size of the three of us put together. He's like, got a problem here? You know what I'm saying? Dude, right away, like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, wow. You know, yeah, you have to watch yourself where you're at. Even the cab driver, it was back then, like, the cab driver was like, you sure you want to go to the bus station? Like, I was like, I ain't going to wait back.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, and did you, what about any of, we went to super authentic Jamaican dance that our Uncle Nerd took us to in L.A., you know, downtown L.A.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that whole dance hall scene was
going on. Sound Clash.
Yeah, in the late 90s. And there was gunshots afterwards and, and celebration and whatnot. Like, how are the dances down there when you're
Oh, in Jamaica?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Because yeah. I would imagine they're like the one we went to, except...
Where did you guys go? Remember which one?
Yeah, we got the Don Wesley in the house.
Over yeah.
There. Where was that? It was off the 110.
Yeah, it was...
Century Club.
It was... No, it was not. It was on Crenshaw. It was... It
wasn't Hollywood Park.
No. No, it was... I'm going to get it.
Yeah, there's, I mean, you got to be careful, like, you know, where you're at, know where you're at. And I mean, even like shows that we've done, I remember with Barrington Levy, we used to do a lot of like Caribbean promoted shows, like in the hood, you know what I mean? And one time we pulled in New York in Brooklyn or Queens, like I think it was Brooklyn, it's all Bed-Stuy kind of area, so I don't remember exactly. Little janky club. As we pull up, dude gets blasted in front of the club, and we just pulled up to go play, and Barrington was like, keep going, you know what I'm saying? And you just, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah, you know, this the Jamaican reggae scene, especially back then, is the Caribbean scene is totally different from the Cali, quote, you know, reggae scene. You
of
know
course,
what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's branched out to what we were talking about earlier. Like, you talked about how the feeling of the roots of it getting lost, you know, and then
yeah.
Now it's an analogy for all music. And
I got to see that at firsthand.
Like, yeah, it's like the
Cali. Not that violence is the root. So I'm just
saying, not at all. But it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if this is a kind of a random comparison, but people have talked to me about reggae before and how I just say the difference between like we've adapted reggae in Hawaii and call it Hawaiian music, and it's just all sunshiny and rainbows and
it's a totally different stuff,
you know. And yeah,
and for that reason,
and it's the surroundings, and that's kind of I think what I was
you write about what you live, I think, you know what I'm saying. Uh-huh. And in Jamaica, they're poor as hell, and the system is messed up, and they were writing about that, and that's kind of what drew me in. You know, one of my favorite bands of all time is still Rage Against the Machine, and not just because they're dope as hell, but because they just didn't give up. You know what I'm saying? They were just like. And people go, oh, they made so much money, they sold out. No, they didn't. They never changed their message, their style ever.
Right.
Just because they made money doing it, that is not selling out.
Right.
They never, you know, they didn't have sunshine rainbow songs ever.
Yeah.
You know
what I'm saying? It's a broad.
Yeah. I like rebel music, man. And, you know, I actually like, you know, no disrespect anybody, but I was a bigger fan of Peter Tosh than Bob Marley. In that respect,
uh-huh.
Because Peter Tosh was kind of like more rebel, you know.
Yeah,
what I'm
well, I think it is kind of apples and oranges a bit when you take Peter Tosh's solo career and put it up against Bob Marley.
Yeah, I mean they both had rebel music, obviously, but Bob Marley was more acceptable, I think, to you know the masses.
Peter
and
Tosh was a lot more.
Peter Tosh was more like just didn't care.
He had machine guns on his covers.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, he was militant. He was super militant, you know. And so you know, I actually have a. So me and Fully Fluid, who was, you know, the bass player for the Word Sound and Power Band, me and him are good friends, and Tony Chin and all them, and I get to play with Fully a lot. So I've done a bunch of, like, Peter Tosh tribute shows with Fully, man, and it's, like, it's an honor to play with those cats,
yeah.
You know, and Santa, too, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, these guys is, like, legendary cats, so Syndicate, you know, created some of the best reggae records ever, you know what I mean? And them guys love to play with me, and that's all I care about.
Yeah, well, you know? In a sense, that's why you're so, you said it yourself, you can adapt to anything.
That's
why, because you've done, in a sense, the homework, which is, in this case, playing with all these people.
I think it's like experience, you know, a lot of time of doing it. And also, I'll tell everybody this, you don't just necessarily jump into like a touring band and just be some huge star. You gotta like put your time in the clubs, you know, playing stamina-wise, like five nights a week, you know,
right.
Six nights a week, people know who you are and you get your stamina up and, you know.
Totally.
Some guys can only be good for like an hour and then they're just, you know,
totally
tired, you know.
As a fan, I gotta ask you a question. Have you ever backed Tenor Saw?
No, unfortunately. He died in Texas.
Yeah.
Like
drug deal gone bad or something?
Yeah, my Stevie told me the whole story because he was living out there then. It's pretty sad. Tenor Saw was one of my favorite artists.
Yeah.
Stevie backed him though. I never got to back him, no, unfortunately. But he was one of my favorite artists. But yeah, there's been some like tragedies in that whole thing. Yeah, I don't know if it was a drug deal or something, you know, something gone bad, but I never got to back him.
I know you did say one of the kindest humans that you've backed / met was Gregory Isaacs.
My top. I love him, man. Rest in peace, Gregory
yeah,
Isaacs, man. He was like an honor for me to play with him for as long as I did, and just to be around him and his vibe and everything. And you know, I mean, he's just a really like genuine great person. And not to mention his song.
It's amazing because that's how his music makes you feel.
Just like that genuine guy. And great. He really was genuine. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not gonna name names. There are some people that I grew up listening to that I really loved, and I thought they were like these super righteous kind of, you know, guys. And I met them, and you know, they were like super disrespectful to like women and stuff like that. And I was like, you know what? Like, then you start to go, okay, well, you know, you kind of get jaded and you're like, I'm going to judge everybody individually, not because your music is this, you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
And, you know, even in the, and even in the Jamaican Rasta reggae world, where everybody thought everybody was like, you know, super spiritual and stuff. Nah, you know what I mean? Yes and no. It depends on who it is.
But don't you think some of that could be a product of their surroundings, right? These
people they get corrupted by all kinds of stuff, or, you know, get into some weird drug stuff or whatever. But, you know what I mean? Like, but there are some really, really genuine artists, man. Like Gentleman is one, Warrior King, like guys like that. They really believe what they're singing about, the message they really live in that. You know what I'm saying? And I have mad respect for like that. And Gregory, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was the cool.
Can you, are there some like super, like maybe two or three really memorable gigs with Gregory that stick out? Or even one?
Yeah, we did a great gig with, and we were backing... I think it was like Marcia Griffiths. It was in Canada. It was like freezing below zero. We was Marcia Griffiths and Gregory and Barrington. Sick. They called it Three the Hard Way. And it was nice. Marcia's birthday. And then they all came on stage together. And it was like amazing. But one story I will tell you about Gregory. And so we go to this show. And we were with Barrington and Gregory at that time. And we get to the show. And the road manager is, you know, drop the ball. We really didn't have our passes, right? But we got there. Barrington and him show up, and they're like, oh, where's your pass? We're like, you didn't give it to us. She's like, oh, I don't know. And just like left us outside, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, what the hell? Gregory Isaacs comes in the next car, and he's like, what are you guys doing outside? And we're like, we don't have our passes. And you know what he said? He goes, I'll stand with you guys. And he just waited there with us until we all got in together, man. And I was like, this brother's like real. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Real, yeah. He gave Stevie, our guitar player producer, his nickname Mad Ross. He calls him the Mad Ross because on stage he's like crazy, you know. He's just, you know, nuts with the guitar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's just like, you're the Mad Ross. So that stuck with him to this day. He never gave me a nickname.
That's amazing. What a great human, but yeah.
Man, he was great. Yeah. It was super sad to us because we were on the road with Barrington and we had a whole tour book with Gregory right before he died.
Oh, really?
And we got the call from Copeland Ford, his manager. And, you know, we kind of expected to get that call, but you know what I mean?
I mean, he was so big in Hawaii for us growing up, the private beach party, and I mean, everything was so huge. Then Gregory and UB40 almost. Like growing up in Kona, two of the biggest guys ever.
I know, and Lucky Dubé was big out in Hawaii.
Yeah, kind of the later, like that's later.
But Gregory, they still love Gregory all day.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah, I think we have a show coming up with Travis, who's with his son, Kevin. You ever heard Kevin?
No.
He's good.
Really?
A lot of these cats' sons
Kevin
now.
Kevin Isaacs?
Kevin Isaacs. And then you got Kenyatta Hill sings for Culture. That's Joseph Hill's son. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of their kids, even Lucky Dubé's daughter.
Yeah.
They're all like coming up now like as artists, like, and they're good.
Let's talk about some of the new, because there's all the Cali like reggae scene and whatnot. But like, what about like Chronics and like all the newer?
Yeah, more, I mean, that whole new school, like new roots thing is great that it's coming back, you know. My favorite artist, we back Jesse Royal a lot. He's awesome. And there's a newer cat. His name is Randy Valentine, and I love him. He's like amazing.
He's from Jamaica?
Yeah, Randy Valentine from Jamaica. Yeah, he's really good.
Like Lovers Rock?
No, it's like a...
Damn, with a name like that?
No, he's actually like a roots cat. He's like a Jesse Royal or a Chronics protege kind of... But he's singer more than protege, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's really good. I mean, that whole like school, you know, I'll say this, you know, I don't, you know, a lot of people tout, you know, Chronics as like the new Bob Marley. I don't necessarily see that.
Really?
Yeah, he gets a lot of hype of that. Like, he's the savior of reggae, which is, in a way...
I mean, I do hear a ton about him.
I respect that opinion. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but, like, you know, the fact that they look at him as, like, he brought back, like, the roots to the reggae thing, because the dancehall thing took over for a long time.
Right.
And it was slack. It was, like, you know, Vibes Cartel singing about, you know, bleach your skin and killing people and stuff, and so people got kind of turned off to that. So then this new school of roots cats like Chronics and then came out, people were like ready for it. Janine, Right. You know what I'm saying? And all of them. So it's nice to see that, man. I love it. You know what I mean? And I'll tell you what, Europe is murdering right now. There's artists you've never even heard of in Europe that are like,
yeah, because there's Alberosi is the last.
Those are the ones you hear about.
Exactly.
But there's artists like Lion D and Raphael and these guys from Italy and my boy Jason and like this. There's like a whole scene in Europe that people don't even really know out here.
Right.
But in Europe, they're like wicked and huge. You should hear their records. You'd be like, what? These guys are wicked. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think it's like I don't know why. Some of them are starting to come out here. Mellow Mood. They're from Italy too. Mellow Mood.
They play Cali.
Wicked group. Two twin guys.
Yep.
Wicked group. And so they're starting to kind of come over here, you know. But it's hard, you know. It's hard to break into this scene now. It's hard for like those kind of artists to break into for some reason.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, is that because of maybe the demographic is different where it's more
It's a patois thing too. You know what I'm saying? Like these kids kind of, I don't think they really understand a lot what Jamaicans. Or like patois accent. I don't think they understand all the words. So I think like the young kids that are like fans now, especially like the Cali Roots crowd and stuff, I think they have a hard time like identifying with the message that these guys are talking about, like from Jamaica or even some of the guys from Europe that are of Jamaican descent and the language.
Where you take like a revolution and it's kind of,
you can hear
the message.
You know what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's touchy. Well, every music touches people, right? So this, you know, revolution and us, and you got, we touch people in all ways that's going to touch them.
Uh-huh.
Not every artist is going to touch them that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think, for me growing up, like reggae, there wasn't this other reggae. There was only Jamaican reggae. I mean, UB40 was out. So England had their little
crew. Yeah, Steel Pulse.
They had UB40 had Tip Irie and Pato Bonson and Maccabee. You know, they had like England, like Europe had a little English.
Yep.
Thing, well, but mostly it was Jamaican.
Then even born Jamaicans come along from Washington,
my boy Notch,
right?
My homie, we still talk all the time.
God, they're so good. Those two albums.
Notch,
are amazing,
man. Sure. Notch is like, you know, one of my like close friends, man. He's amazing. That's the singer, the new singer, Notch. We talk all the time. He actually,
like crooner.
Yeah, he actually got into reggaeton, so he's kind of big in the whole reggaeton thing.
Oh no way!
He got a lot of big hits in the reggaeton thing, and then he was doing stuff with. Was it Thievery Corporation or Massive Attack? I think it was Thievery Corporation. He was touring with
that
singing.
Makes sense.
He's wicked. Yeah, exactly. So they kind of bridged a little gap of like America.
They were big in Hawaii too.
Yeah, they were good. They had catchy songs. They took old school rhythms like real rock.
Yeah.
All the rhythms was like old school. Old school Studio One stuff.
It's kind of weird. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's
yeah.
All, it's all that they adapted everything.
Yeah. They did, yeah.
But
they did.
It's weird how like that. Didn't I guess there's a couple years of gap between like that and Sublime, because then the Long Beach Dub All Stars guys linked up with was it Notch?
Oh really? They
yeah.
Did? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's funny how there's that link in the gap of where Sublime came in and then there was opened the floodgates a
it
little
did.
Bit.
It did. They were super influential, I think, for a lot of people, man. You know what I mean? They were super influential for a lot of people to like. And then you're right. A lot of people, I think, they go back and go like, oh, is this... So that's how people started to know. Even with Sight is Stupid, how they... Don Carlos tours with them all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? They're putting him in front of their audience because they love him and he's a great guy and he's awesome. And so they want their audience to go, look, this is one of the pioneers in this music.
And it's badass because it's like, you guys should know. Like, that's what they're
saying.
Yeah, that's... Like,
that's the thing is they want people to know, like, you guys should know who this
yeah,
is. Like,
respect
you know what I mean?
For that.
Yeah, because they respect that. You know what I mean? And it's nice to have a way to like be able to show people that.
Yeah.
You know?
A platform
to show people that because they might not have never heard it.
Yeah.
And they might not even like it. I don't know. You know?
Yeah, totally. Well, I keep on thinking about the language barrier kind of thing that you're thinking about.
I think that's a big part of it.
Have you heard the new Damian Marley album?
Yeah, Stony Hill.
Yeah, and then Nail Pond Cross.
Yeah.
Which is just the thickest patois.
It's a hardcore sound.
Well, I had to Google it, of course, and look it up because I was like, okay, I gotta. But that's the epitome of what you're talking about. But Damian Marley's a different story because he's huge.
Yeah, but a lot of
but you can't understand where that song was.
even with Damian, I think you know people love him because he's an amazing performer. But I bet if you ask like a lot of these kids that will go see him, like they probably don't know any of the words. Like you said, they probably don't know.
Yeah,
you know, because people used to think that Welcome to Jamrock was like a. Kind of like One Love Jamaica song. It's not. Welcome to Jam Rock is about the violence that's
It's a gangster rap song in a sense.
It's not really a gangster rap. He's really, in that song, he's telling you what's happening in Jamaica now, like what I was talking about with the gun violence and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what he's talking about. Like, welcome to Jam Rock, the camp where the thugs them camp at, you know what I mean? Like, he's talking about, like, okay, it's different now. It's not like One Love right now.
Yeah. It's funny. I talked about this on another episode, but how music can mask the message sometimes inside, and there's that song Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People.
Oh, exactly.
Which sounds like the shiniest, funny, and I remember a couple years after realizing that was about Columbine.
It was about the school.
And I'm like, what?
That's genius.
And then heard the lyrics, and I'm like, holy
that's a genius.
Shit,
that's a genius.
Run faster
song.
Than my bullet? Like, this is so gnarly.
I love that.
But kind of similar. Welcome to Jam Rock.
Same thing.
Like, yeah,
welcome to
party.
Jam Rock. But
we're struggling. Like, yeah, people are struggling over here, kind of thing.
Basically, yeah, that's what he's talking about, you know, in that song. So, like, yeah, you're right. So, but I mean, Damien is such an incredible performer and has so many good songs. That I don't think it matters.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. He's not a good example.
Medication is like genius. I love that song. That's my favorite song on the record.
Isn't that the one that Rodigan did? I think Rodigan did like a dub play remix of it or something.
He did?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. I would love to
hear
that.
I just saw it on his Instagram.
I would love to hear that.
Big up.
Anything
Damien
does,
I listen
to. I've been a fan of him since he was like 16, you know?
Who, David Rodigan?
No, Damien Marley.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of Hawaii, the first album, Junior Gong.
Oh, God. When he did
Me
Near Junior Gong, Me Till You Know Young Is Veteran. I was like, sold. I was like, because all the other Marley kids sounded like Bob.
Yeah,
which is cool.
He's the one.
He came out and he just had this whole different. And now a lot of the sons now, like Joe Mercer and Skip, they're going that route of like not trying to sound as much like Bob. So they're all kind of they have their own like original styles, which is cool because there's a lot of Marley kids now.
Oh God,
you know?
Yeah, grandkids, kids.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch,
right.
And they're all talented. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean the lineage is there, so
they're all super talented.
You're right, Damien. Has
he's
forged
my
his
favorite.
Own his own he's my favorite too
he's my favorite
he's forged his own sound
we got to play on the Jamrock cruise a couple years ago on his Jamrock crew.
Who else was on that?
I was there with Barrington, and then Third World was on there, Capleton was on there, Busy Signal, who else was on there, Damien obviously, Jacure was on there, a lot of artists. It was like second year they did that thing, and it was amazing. It was super cool.
That just went down to Jamaica.
It goes from Miami to Jamaica, and then around Jamaica, it stops in like Ocho Rios and different places, and then goes back to Miami.
Okay.
So it's like a week cruise,
yeah.
And it's like all reggae all day. All the big selectors are on there, like Rodding and those guys. They'll have Sound Clash with like Mighty Crown and Bass Odyssey and all that on the boat. It's like nonstop reggae.
Well, it's funny because that's the people that you're talking about that are the opposite of the kind of the, those are the purists, you know, that do understand all the
those are yeah those are the people that like yeah actually J-Bo got on last year, which I was super proud of.
Oh, that's
yeah, he was probably the only non-Jamaican artist on that.
They loved him though, right?
Oh yeah, they loved him. Yeah, he's amazing, you know. And we used to, you know, he's our homie, we used to play with him for years and stuff, and like it's like us and him have a same similar story thing, because like it's like us with Detour, like we were like the only band to ever go to Sumfest and back a Jamaican artist in Jamaica at Reggae Sumfest. And so the first year we did it with Barrington, he had to fly us out himself because the promoters wouldn't pay for it. And they were like, what do you mean you're going to bring a band from LA? You crazy? There's plenty of bands here. It's Jamaica. You know what I'm saying? I was like, no, I need my band. Right?
Yeah.
He's like, I have to have my band. They're like, okay, you pay for this. Okay, cool. Brought us out. We get there. People like hating on, like, you know, the promoters and like the crew. Like, I'm on there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're kind of looking at us like, why would he bring you guys all the way out here, right?
Not helpful and all that.
Nah, just kind of like screw facing us, you know what I mean? But okay, whatever. We go on stage and we murdered it, bro. And I come off stage and they were like, yo, respect my boss, you know what I'm saying? And after that, they were just, and we got rolled up in the Jamaican Gleaner and the Star.
Nice, that's like, back to that thing we're talking
about. Barrington Levy's foreign band has murdered Sumfest, and he was like so proud, you know what I'm saying? And we were too, because, you know, it's a big deal, you know what I'm saying? To us, like, it was a super big deal, you know? You have to prove yourself out there, so.
Well, it's like coming full circle, though. If that's what you're talking about, if you blow it, they're going to let you know.
Oh, yeah,
down
you
there.
Suck.
But
they
if you,
don't
but
tell
if,
you.
But if you, but if you just smash it like you guys
you
do,
have to.
They're gonna praise you.
And then you go back the next year, and they're like, well, man, you know,
yeah.
Cool, you know what I mean? Like, now you got their respect, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's a hard crowd. I feel like the Cali reggae world's a little different. People are a little more, like, forgiving, you know? Like, then they go, oh, that was awesome. You know what I'm saying?
You're talking about nowadays.
Nowadays, yeah.
Yeah.
Then the Jamaican world.
Because what was it back in the day, the reggae crowd in California, like in the 80s and stuff, was...
There really wasn't, it was a small, you know, I mean, there was reggae fans, but it was small, it's an older crowd, and it was small, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And Sublime hadn't come out yet, you know what I mean? So they really opened the door a lot. I think a lot of people started listening to reggae after Sublime came out. Like, oh...
A lot of non-purists.
A lot of non, like, you know, Jamaican fans of reggae. Yeah. Like, Sublime introduced them to reggae, so they might have gone back then and said, oh, I want to, what are these guys listening to? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just always, it's, I mean, it's like.
And you guys were out about the same time, right? You guys started around the same time, right?
No, we started in 97.
Oh, 97, okay. Yep. So it's just like, you guys were right after Stupid about the same time, right?
Yeah, like right, yeah, right.
Because I remember meeting them too. I remember meeting Kyle Miles like at Brick by Brick in San Diego, like when they were just, like teenagers.
Yeah. Were they coming to see Barrington?
No, they were opening. Oh, they were still Slightly Stupid. It was just a three piece.
Yeah. Oh, old school Stupid.
Yeah. That's how I met them, and we stayed friends all these years, and yeah, we're fam. You know what I'm saying? We're family. And I record a lot with them. Me and Kyle get together and like write and record. We've done like hundreds of tracks.
Nice.
Yeah, we've done a bunch. Actually, I have a song on their record, Hold It Down, the Scott song. That's me on drums.
We got to play you, we're releasing a Pepper song, a single, Good Thing Going, the Sugar Might Not cover with Miles.
Dope.
Stupid.
Dope. So, that's awesome. Yeah. I know, I heard it. I think I did I hear it?
Yeah, you haven't heard the finished one with
Miles. I heard, not with Miles, but I heard the rhythm,
yeah. So.
Yeah, man. Rest in peace, Sugar Might Not, too.
Yeah,
absolutely. Got to back him a few times, too.
Oh, no way.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it? Where was that at?
Those were in Cali, I think. I can't remember the venue.
Festivals?
Yeah, I think it was like a festival, a couple festivals and a couple clubs.
So you played Good Thing Going in back.
I played Good Thing Going with Sugar Might Not. I did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, hey.
I got to play all these hits, man. It's fun, man. It's like, you know, you never think you'd be able to do that. You're like fans of these guys, and you're like, oh, shoot, I actually have to learn their set right now and play it. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, those pinch yourself moments, right?
Yeah, for sure. But after you do it for so long, then it becomes, you just can't never let it become a job.
Yeah.
Once it becomes a job, it's no fun anymore.
Well, that's when you literally got to pinch yourself every once in a while.
And go,
oh, okay, wait.
Like,
yeah,
look at
right,
us, look what we're doing. Man, we're touring the country together with all our friends.
Yes.
And people are coming and screaming and having a great time at the show. Well. Come on, man. Like, you
blessings
know,
and gratitude.
It's always
all
blessings, man. So, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, on that note, I think let's wrap it up here for the 8th episode of Disposable
Man, thanks
Heroes.
For having me.
Hey, thanks so much, Debbie. That was
so
amazing.
So glad to be with you guys, man.
Hey,
you know?
Thanks for being on the tour with us, man. This is
dude, thanks for having us. I think we all need to do a collab song, too.
Yeah.
Like, in the studio.
Yeah. That's we have our studio in Redondo.
Friday.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Exactly.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
And we got the Don Wesley.
And, yeah, Don Wesley and Yoga Master over here.
Because we are, this is Disposable Heroes on the road.
Disposable Heroes.
The Nice Dreams Tour.
The best live podcast ever.
The best.
All
right, keep your eyes out for Travel C's new EP. Hopefully coming soon.
Yeah, and what? Actually, last thing before we go, what is next for Zeb and
for Travel C's? We're gonna after this tour, we're gonna we have a few one-offs in November, but we're gonna finish the record now. We're trying to get it done hopefully by mid October.
Is Rude Girl gonna be on the record?
I'm not sure. I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think Rude Girl, that was a single, but I'm not. I don't know yet.
And then it'll come out in 2018. The Travel C, the new Travel C.
We're hoping to get it because we're hoping to do a tour in January, a winter tour. So we're hoping to get this thing done like now.
Okay.
So we're even working on the bus and stuff, just trying to get it like out. So hopefully we'll get it done by October, and then I don't know the release date, but we're hoping by the end of the year.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
Cool. And what are all your socials and everything?
My socials is I'm on Instagram at Zeb Drum, ZEBDRUM. You can check me out there. And I don't have a Twitter anymore.
Yeah, no, not with those for anything. So.
Do you guys do Twitter and all that?
Yeah,
I don't
we
even
do.
Have a Snapchat.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do it all, man.
Like your own, not the band Pepper, but like your personal?
Personal, I do everything except Snapchat because we just have one Snapchat.
Right, for that.
Yeah.
I'm so ADD. I can't. I need to get more of myself.
But, and then at Tribal Seeds.
Yeah, at Tribal Seeds is on Instagram. Yeah, at Tribal Seeds. And then, you know, check us out. Keep your eyes open. Hopefully, it'll be in the next month or so. Next couple months, we're hoping to get it out. So. Thanks for having me, dog.
Yeah, thanks again, Zebby.
See you on stage.
Hey, we'll see you on stage tonight, brother.
Hell yeah.
All right, Disposable Heroes.
Disposable Heroes. Bup, bup, bup.